Chapter 47, a chapter in which the crisis is gradually approaching. "My word, I see the gentlemen have been taking a morning walk," Cao Cheng called out from quite a long way off. "We've been presenting the water sacrifice," lied Moonlight, putting the casket into Big Tiger's saddlebag before all eyes. "The vessels of sacrifice have to be purified before sunrise," he explained with a glance at the casket. "I understand," said Cao Cheng politely. "It is a good act for the spirits of the departed. May I invite the gentlemen to have tea?" Christian and Big Tiger were hungry. They emptied out Christian's saddlebag for everyone to have a share. And when the soldiers saw that there was not only millet, but dried meat and cheese, too, they became quite talkative. Four of them were Tungans, and one was a Sart with a big black beard. Christian and Big Tiger could not understand the Tungans, although they spoke Chinese, and the Sart remained silent. Cao Cheng had to act as interpreter. "Will the noble benefactors," and he bowed to Christian and Big Tiger, "please forgive the ignorance of my men. They give thanks for a royal breakfast, but unfortunately the speech of the educated is a closed book to them." Despite this difficulty, there was plenty of talk until Moonlight said it was time to set out. But it was not so easy to get started. The horses had to be fed and watered, and the pack horse had to be loaded. "What's the hurry for, honored sir?" asked Cao Cheng. "In hurry is error." "Listen to me," said Moonlight. "You would like to be made a colonel, wouldn't you?" "I have no objection to promotion," Cao Cheng admitted. "There are various ways of achieving promotion," Moonlight continued. "There's bribery, but that's expensive and uncertain. There are exceptional mental gifts, but how is a man to show that he has them? The surest way to earn promotion is to catch a criminal." "But there are none here," said Cao Cheng regretfully. "And if there were, they would not say they are criminals. They are silent, so to speak." Moonlight held Cao Cheng fast by one of his brass buttons. "You're right," he said. "It's very difficult to catch criminals because you can't see from the fellows' faces that they're criminals. But we have found out, nevertheless, that the greatest criminal within the four seas is around here." Cao Cheng was horrified. "Here," he cried, "then I must know him." "Yes, you certainly do," said Moonlight. "And his name is Greencoat."
"What?" screeched Cao Cheng. "The honorable merchant, Mr. Greencoat?
Tell me how you came to get the order to search for the two sons of heroes, Compass Mountain and Big Tiger," asked Moonlight. Cao Cheng sighed. "Actually, it's a state secret, but as you already know most of it, I'll tell you the whole story. One day, a telegram came from the old governor in Urumqi, ordering all frontier officers, but particularly myself, to search for the young gentleman. They had left Huai Lei Xian, it said, on the sixth day of last month, and they were expected in the capital on the 16th day, but they didn't arrive. Have you thought this matter out? I have spent countless sleepless nights thinking it out, and days, too. But you didn't go about it right," said Moonlight. "Tell me, how long does it take to travel from Kalgan to Urumqi?"
90 days by camel."
"Right," said Moonlight. "And from Huai La Sien, it's 2 days longer. How, then, could the journey be made in 10 days?
"Perhaps with one of those new horseless cars," said Cao Cheng.
"Bravo!" cried Moonlight. "I see you're a proper captain and not a numbskull. The two young sons of princes were traveling in such a car. For remember, they're young excellencies. But this accursed Greencoat stole the car from them at the Etzin Gol, and now he's driving around in it himself, and I shouldn't be surprised if we catch him at the place called Falling Wall."
"Ha!" shouted Cao Cheng, leaping to his feet. "Have they saddled? You lazy bones! Are you ready, you five sleepyheads?"
"Don't be too hasty," said Moonlight, and he called Christian and Big Tiger to give the captain an account of what had happened at the Etzin Gol.
"The wretch!" shouted Cao Cheng. "I thought he was an honorable merchant traveling to Hami, and now he's a stinking car thief hiding at Falling Wall, and we'll catch him. But it's a dangerous region."
"Catching criminals is always dangerous," said Moonlight. "You can't do it in a melon garden. Go now and tell your men that we're going to catch Greencoat. Let them load their guns and take the horsehair out of the barrels, and you can promise them a generous reward into the bargain."
Cao Chen gathered his five soldiers around him and spoke to them. Then they all talked excitedly together, and finally they roared, "Bravo!" on account of the reward. After that, everything went very quickly, and in a few minutes the men were in the saddle. Cao Cheng rode ahead. The sun had risen, but it was cold in the valley of the stony stream. Moonlight would have preferred to ride back to Ming Shui in order to follow the ass tracks from there. But Dumping Yak said, "Leave this to Cao Cheng. He knows the shortest way." They remained a bit behind the captain and his five men, and Dumping Yak asked the boys to tell him what it was like in the passage under the fortress wall and how they had come by the casket. Christian told what he knew, and Big Tiger helped him, and when they'd finished their story, Moonlight said, "In the end, Greencoat killed Ma, too. I heard him shouting for help."
"We don't believe he killed him," replied Christian. "Ma had time to run away, while Greencoat was struggling with his legs caught in the hole."
"Oh, I remember," said Moonlight. "That was why he also shouted for help, the ruffian."
"He shouted because he was frightened," said Big Tiger. "And he was frightened because Christian bit him in the leg to make him afraid of the hole. Otherwise, he would have found us."
"He wouldn't be alive if he had," said Moonlight savagely.
"It's better as it is, Little Paw," said Dumping Yak.
They had reached the pass leaning out of Stony Stream Valley, and the horses began to trot. The hills had become mountains, which, though not high, blocked the view completely. In many places, a groove could be detected in the ground. That was the former caravan road, now obliterated. After 2 hours, the riders reached a high plateau, which gave an open view at least to the north. Suddenly, Cao Cheng pulled up, and the whole cavalcade halted. The track of an ass appeared from a side valley to the left, and followed the old silted-up caravan road as far as the eye could reach.
"What's up?" asked Moonlight innocently.
"There's been a donkey here," replied Cao Cheng. "Perhaps it strayed."
"There was someone riding it," asserted Moonlight. "Otherwise, it wouldn't have followed the old road."
"You're right, sir," said Cao Cheng. "We must think this out."
"Well said," said Moonlight, dismounting. "Let us hold a war council."
He led the horses aside to hobble them and beckoned Christian and Big Tiger to follow him.
"Greencoat is just in front of us," he whispered exultantly. "We'll ride on now and get him."
"But what about our truck?" Big Tiger objected timidly.
"No fear about that," said Moonlight. "I'll trample Shong Ma's ribs until he confesses where he left it."
"I'll have none of that," said Dumping Yak sternly. He had come unobserved and was standing beside Moonlight. He was the same venerable chief that Christian and Big Tiger had been presented to when they saw him for the first time, sitting in the tent at the hidden well. And yet he was another man. His hand lay calmly on his belt, and his eyes no longer flashed, although he was looking straight ahead.
"His anger has left him," thought Big Tiger.
"I shall take over command from now on," said Dumping Yak, and he went over to where Cao Cheng was sitting with his men. They made room for him respectfully. When Moonlight, Christian, and Big Tiger had also joined the circle, Dumping Yak said,
"I find myself on strange ground here, Captain, and your commander is the great old chief in Urumqi. His authority has been greatly harmed by the car thief Greencoat. In this matter, you and I are allies. But as it is difficult for two helmsmen to steer a ship into port at the same time, I beg you to permit me to take over command."
"Most willingly," said Cao Cheng, who really did not know what to do. provided only that my men don't notice anything.
Your face will be saved, promised Dumpignac. I shall tell you what's to be done, and you shall pass on my orders as if they came from yourself.
Agreed, cried Cao Cheng. Those are words which I am happy to hear, and orders which I shall carry out.
How can Falling Wall be reached in a horseless car? Asked Dumpignac.
Only from the south, replied Cao Cheng, where the valley is open and broad. Towards the north, it gets narrow. There, it's a defile, so to speak.
But your highness will see for yourself what it's like, for we're on the road which leads through the narrow defile into Falling Wall.
We shall be there in 2 hours, and then the danger of death from falling rocks awaits us.
I should like to spare you that danger, said Dumpignac.
Your servants will obey you all the more willingly because of it, Cao Cheng assured him.
Would you find Falling Wall even without a road? Inquired Dumpignac.
I'd find it by day or night, asserted Cao Cheng, but more easily by day.
Then ride on without delay, ordered Dumpignac. Occupy the exit to the south, but instruct your men to be very cautious. None of them must be seen, for Greencoat will reach Falling Wall from the north shortly after you. His business manager is there already, and apparently there's a third man, too, whom we do not know. If Greencoat tries to leave Falling Wall today, stop him and arrest him. If he refuses to halt, fire and hit him.
Fire! Cried Cao Cheng eagerly. Hitting the mark is our strong point, our specialty, so to speak. I've got a sart here, and he pointed to the bearded man, who is as swift as a spirit. If camel lice could fly, he'd bring them down like snowflakes in winter. He's yours to command. Do you want him to shoot one man, or two at a time?
As he's such a good shot, said Dumpignac, let him hit the tires of the car and leave the men alive.
What's the good of shooting wheels? Asked Cao Cheng, astonished.
To make a frightful bang, said Moonlight, and then the car can't run away anymore.
Falling Wall will fall again, said Cao Cheng, much troubled.
So much the better, said Moonlight. If the thunder of its fall confuses the criminals, they will be all the easier to catch.
Post yourselves where there are no rocks, ordered Dumpignac.
That's a good plan, cried Cao Cheng joyfully. Permit me to instruct my soldiers and pass on your orders.
Dumpignac nodded, and Cao Cheng explained the matter to his men.
Before they set out, he ordered the sart to kowtow to Dumpignac.
This is the magic marksman, he said by way of introduction. His name is Kasim. Now we're off.
Remain at your posts until sunrise tomorrow morning, ordered Dumpignac.
We shall be with you by then, and we shall enter Falling Wall together.
If anything happens in the meantime, we are near you and shall stand by you.
We shall win the siege, cried Cao Cheng proudly. The criminals will tremble at the sight of us.
He mounted his horse and followed his men, who were already riding on. They waved their rifles, and Big Tiger and Christian cried, "Se Yabona!"
Wait 2 minutes, said Dumpignac to Moonlight.
He asked Christian for the map and studied it carefully. Then he pointed to the shaded rock region and asked whether Falling Wall was there.
Christian said, Big Tiger and I think it is.
Then suddenly he cried, Yes, it is, for certain, because he had discovered the brackets that indicate a narrow defile, and they were at the northern end of the valley.
Dumpignac nodded.
But it's a pity we don't know which side of Falling Wall is the higher, he said, the one with the rocks or the other one.
But we do know, cried Christian eagerly, and it's the east side where there are no rocks or only small ones.
How do you know that? Asked Dumpignac.
Christian took out the magnifying glass and pointed to the figure written on the mountains to the east of Falling Wall. It was 7073.
This figure tells the height of the mountains in feet, he explained.
When there are a lot of peaks together, the figure is always on the highest one. So the rocky side is the lower.
Is 7073 feet very high? Asked Big Tiger.
Yes, it's high, said Christian. But as the place where we're standing now is 6560 feet high, the difference is only 513 feet.
Bolna, cried Dampignac, standing up and patting them on the back as much to say, you are bright lads to work with.
Then they all mounted. The venerable chief rode ahead as before, watching everything. He kept the donkey's tracks constantly in view and would have spotted Greencoat a long way off, for the disused caravan road led steadily uphill by the edge of a range of mountains, though the ascent was scarcely noticeable. To the north stretched a completely inaccessible high plateau, furrowed with a thousand fissures. It was past midday before the slope leveled out. Dampignac rode more cautiously than ever. For about 2 li, the donkey's trail ran dead straight. Then the route went downhill. The high plateau to the right broke off in steep walls of rock. To the left, the slope was creased with numerous recesses, which further down merged into a black rock. The valley became a gorge, and one could see where it led to. Dampignac stopped, and they all dismounted.
Little Paw, said Dampignac solemnly, I am not used to giving you orders, but I must do so now. He pointed with his whip to the edge of a brown wall of rock, which stood opposite the deep rents in the mountainside and the dark gorge. Falling wall begins over there, he said. Go into the gorge, find yourself a suitable place, and take a look down into the valley to see what's going on. Then creep back to the gorge and stay there until sunrise. I forbid you to do anything on your own, but I authorize you to fire on anyone who attempts to go out through the defile.
Even on the third man? Asked Moonlight. You spoke of a third man.
Even on him, said Dampignac.
Where does this third man come from all of a sudden? Inquired Moonlight.
Little Paw, cried Dampignac. Stupid Little Paw! Do you think a donkey would go all on its own to Falling Wall merely to enable Shang Ma to ride?
Oh, you're right, said Moonlight, abashed. But if it's some innocent person who brought the ass...
He is not quite innocent, said Big Tiger.
Aha, cried Moonlight. There you are again, knowing something nobody else knows.
We just think something, explained Christian, and it often turns out to be right.
And what have you thought? Inquired Dampignac.
We generally think the same, said Big Tiger. Compass Mountain thinks the third man is a soldier.
And Big Tiger thinks his name is Springtime Snake, declared Christian.
Moonlight whistled through his teeth.
I remember, he said, that's the scoundrel who fired at Good Fortune at the Etzen Gull. It would be fun to have him in front of my gun.
Take some food with you and go, said Dampignac. Big Tiger opened his saddlebag, which also contained the jewel casket, and each of them took what they needed for the night. Moonlight then took his pistol out of its holster and stuck it in his belt.
It's quicker this way, he said, if there isn't much time.
I rely on you, Little Paw, said Dampignac.
I hear and obey, replied Moonlight. Then he took a solemn farewell of Christian and Big Tiger.
Beware of the deadly falling rocks, sons of heroes, he warned them. Under a rock, you'd get no breath at all, and I couldn't pull you out, or perhaps only half.
Christian and Big Tiger wanted to shout, Se Yabona! But Dampignac forbade them, so they only waved as Moonlight disappeared downhill behind projecting rocks.
Come on, said Dampignac, turning his horse and taking Moonlight's horse by the reins. They rode back the way they had come. Big Tiger and Christian did not know what to make of it all until after a li, Dampignac dismounted. The brown rocks of Falling Wall had disappeared from view, and so had the gorge.
To the right lay the high plateau with its many fissures and clefts, and to the left the mountains. They were as gray as if a rain of stones had fallen and then gathered in great channels. The creeks, which ran from the broad crests to the valley below, showed light and shade, but no speck of green, not even a thistle. "Is it 7,073 feet high here?" asked Dampignac. "It must be," said Christian. "The mountains are all low, but that's the highest of them." Christian and Big Tiger took off their coats and laid them over their saddles, while the venerable chief looked for a spot from which they could start the climb. His eyes wandered over the stony gorges, the rocks, and all the creeks to the summit. "We can't do it with horses," he said. "How long would it take you two to get up there?"
"We'll take off our boots, then we can climb faster," said Big Tiger.
"An hour," said Christian, "or perhaps only half an hour."
"Good," said Dampignac. "Put on your coats again and take the whip."
"But what about the jewel casket?" asked Big Tiger.
"If it's not too heavy, take it with you," said Dampignac. "I'll take the horses over to Cao Cheng. Wait for me on the mountain."
"And what if something happens?" asked Christian.
"Do what you think fit, but on no account go into the valley."
"We hear and obey," they said.
They started to climb, carrying the casket in turns. After a while, they stopped to wave back at Dampignac, but they could only hear the trot of the horses, for the creeks proved to be narrow defiles which ascended steeply. One could see the edges, but nothing beyond. Big Tiger and Christian hurried up onto the nearest terrace of rock, but still they could not see Dampignac. He must have turned into a side valley, and they were not yet high enough to have a view over the whole mountain range. After climbing up a long stony ravine, they noticed that going barefoot was not such a simple matter.
"It needs practice," said Christian, when the stones started rolling down on their toes. Eventually, they got to the last terrace, and from then on it was not too bad. A soft layer of desert dust lay in the flat trough which led to the top. Christian had almost completely forgotten the need for caution and felt like shouting, "Hello!" for everything could be seen from up there.
"Lie down flat," cried Big Tiger, for standing, they could be seen from everywhere.
The view was magnificent. They could see the many mountains round which they had ridden, the hills which grew smaller and smaller, the valley of the stony stream, the little plain, behind it the big endless one, and in the foreground the squat fortress of Ming Shui, which looked like a die that someone had lost. All this was spread before them, but Christian and Big Tiger scarcely glanced at it, for there was something far more exciting at the other side. The real summit of their mountain was still a good bit higher up, but they saw quite enough from their vantage point.
"They're cooking," said Christian.
"That means they're leaving today," said Big Tiger, who always drew conclusions.
"But where's the truck?"
"I don't see it either. Only the ass is there."
"And Springtime Snake," said Christian.
"But where have they put the truck?"
"Do you think they can see us?" asked Big Tiger.
"Better take off our hats," suggested Christian. They crawled back a bit, took off their hats, and laid them near the casket with their boots. Again they looked down into the valley, which had once been called Blessed Shelter. Opposite them rose a steep wall of brownish-red rock. Backing it was a precipitous mountain slope, which, they could see, trailed off into empty stone valleys. Down below they saw caves, to which led a sandbank, which extended over the bottom of the valley. Darasen grass grew there, and great blocks of rock lay about all over the place. In the north, the walls of rock were quite close to the steep mountainside, forming the gorge in which Moonlight was sitting, hoping for someone to come along and get shot. To the south, the valley lay open. The walls of rock ceased suddenly, and sand and dust-covered hills took their place. In between them, an empty strip of gravel lay glistening in the sun. Only a glimpse could be seen of the stream which flowed into it.
"Perhaps the truck is at our side of the valley," said Christian.
It may be, said Big Tiger, leaning over. It's no use trying to see. There are rocks on our side, too.
We must watch what they do, said Christian.
The three were at their meal. Greencoat, the stout agent, and Springtime Snake. There was a kettle on the fire, and they did not seem to be talking much, but obviously they had no fear of falling wall, for they had made the fire right beside the biggest cave, under the overhanging rock, and near a great mound of fallen rocks. Suddenly Big Tiger nudged Christian.
"Look over there," he said excitedly.
"Perhaps that's Cassim," said Christian.
"And there's another, and over there, another."
They had only now noticed Cao Chang's soldiers, who were posted on the hills at the exit of the valley. They looked mere specks, for only their heads could be seen.
"Greencoat is encircled," said Big Tiger.
"It can't be helped." His eyes still searched the hills.
"Where are the horses?" he asked.
"Cao Chang has hidden them," said Christian.
Down below, they had finished their meal. Greencoat, whom they recognized easily despite the distance, stood up and went into the cave. He soon came out and spoke to Springtime Snake. He was obviously giving him something, for Springtime Snake made a kowtow of thanks.
"Now he's saying thanks 10,000 times," remarked Big Tiger.
"What for?" asked Christian.
"We must find that out," replied Big Tiger, who was beginning to enjoy the game thoroughly.
"But what if someone shoots him first?" Christian objected.
"Then we'll find out afterwards," said Big Tiger coolly. Down in the valley, Springtime Snake had stood up after his kowtow. He saluted the agent with a curt bow and went over to the ass. But the ass didn't want him. He was nibbling greedily at the Darasen grass, and when Springtime Snake approached, he lifted his tail and ran away, kicking with his hind legs several times. The stout agent, who was sitting at the fire, slapped his stomach with pleasure at the spectacle, but Greencoat gave him a resounding blow in the face.
"The gentlemen are not very nice to each other," remarked Christian.
"A man can't quarrel with his boss," said Big Tiger. "Look how the fat man is running." The agent had jumped up and was running quick as a weasel to catch the ass, which the clumsy Springtime Snake was approaching from the rear. The ass kicked again, and Springtime Snake fell down, though he was too far away to be hit.
"The coward," said Christian.
Meantime, the agent arrived on the scene and with incredible agility caught the ass by the ears and led him to the fire. Springtime Snake limped behind.
"Did he get hurt after all?" asked Christian, surprised.
"No, he's only pretending," said Big Tiger. Springtime Snake went on with his play acting. He threw himself on the ground and rubbed his leg as if it were injured. When the agent had saddled the ass, there seemed to be an argument. Springtime Snake gesticulated vehemently and did not want to stand up. In the end, the agent helped him into the saddle, and he rode off towards the southern exit of the valley. Christian and Big Tiger were frightfully excited. They watched, fascinated, as Springtime Snake trotted cheerfully along by the brook, just where the water trickled away and the last tussocks of Darasen grass stood like lost sentries. Springtime Snake turned round in the saddle and waved. Perhaps Greencoat waved back, but they could only see Springtime Snake, nor did they notice the black speck on the first hill rising a little. It was only for an instant, and they saw nothing more except that the ass suddenly collapsed under Springtime Snake. The crack of the shot came much later. By this time, Springtime Snake had struggled clear of the ass and was running as hard as he could back to Falling Wall, his hurt leg completely forgotten. And that was only natural, for more shots resounded all around and echoed between the rocks, but the rocks did not move.
"Why are they all shooting?" asked Christian indignantly.
"I don't know," replied Big Tiger. "It seems shooting is contagious." Greencoat had thrown himself on the ground where he was, but the nimble agent had disappeared into the cave. The last shots resounded as Springtime Snake reached the sandbank. Without stopping to think, he flung himself down beside Greencoat, and both of them stuck their heads in the sand as if they imagined that that would help.
"We must get back," said Christian hurriedly. "When they lift their heads, they'll look round to see what's wrong."
"If we lie still, they'll take us for stones," said Big Tiger.
"Remember how the venerable chief spotted us in the Black City?" said Christian.
At this, Big Tiger gave in, and they crawled back to where their boots and hats lay beside the jewel casket.
"What now?" asked Big Tiger, looking round him.
Christian looked around, too, and both noticed that they weren't near the top of the mountain. They also saw that a spiky crest ran along the ridge, which would make a much better hiding place and lookout than the domed summit on which they had been lying. So they took their things and continued their climb, crawling the last lap. There was not much room up there, but they could move freely, at least on all fours. Big rough stones formed a crude parapet with several narrow peepholes. Lying behind them, they could watch what was going on down at Falling Wall.